All right, welcome to another edition of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. I'm Scott.
I'm Tippins.
How's it going, Tippins?
It's going.
Week
it's
was going. Good?
Yeah, great yeah. week.
Busy? Can't complain. You've been busy. Yeah.
Busy, working on, I'm back producing a little more and trying to get some of these songs ready to put out. So
I'm still waiting for you to send them over,
I know. I'm just...
Don't be afraid.
Yeah, I'm not. It's not ready for the true feedback yet. So
I feel you.
Yeah. But yeah, they're coming along well, so maybe I'll be comfortable enough to share them soon. So
all right, that's good. I totally get that, man.
We've had them for 6 months, a year now, so yeah. we're slowly getting through them, in between life. So
yeah, exactly. Life gets in the way of music.
Yeah.
So listen, we discussed on our one of the first two podcasts, I think, we wanted to schedule a drummer to speak with, and we're lucky enough today to have our good friend of the pod, Alan Najarian, with us today. Welcome, Al.
Thank you very much, guys. Nice to be here.
Welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
We're hoping that you can give us some insights, to a drummer's approach to home studio work, and essentially. I guess let's just start off with, I first got to know you as a drummer, right?
Right.
And also as a songwriter. But tell us a little bit about your evolution. Did you just start off just playing drums and then, got interested in other instruments, or how did you start off?
Well, it was actually, at the very beginning, how it kind of came about was really... through my parents.
Yeah.
So, I was a wicked, hyperactive kid, and my mom put some pots and pans in front of me, and I would beat those all day long. So that's how things initially
drove your parents insane.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that graduated, to a drum set, and then, I started getting into bands in high school.
Right.
Yeah. And, and I was probably... maybe 12 or 13 when I started, and by the time I was 16, I was in high school bands, doing stuff and that kind of thing. So, and then got into the Boston rock and roll scene.
Right.
And so by 18, I was playing clubs and different kinds of original bands, because Boston had a great music scene back then, and
sure.
all these underground, punk clubs and stuff. So that's
sure.
how, I started with that. And that eventually... graduated into different bands through the 80s, and as we were in a band
sure.
together, and that's kind of even
like how did you get into, because when I met you I met you as a drummer, right? And I didn't know that you were also writing songs at that time as well. And one of the first songs I heard from you, you had actually written on your Casio, Innocence in Blue, which is a beautiful song. But you had that little Casio keyboard.
Yeah.
And so how did you kind of make that transition, I guess is what I'm getting to, from drummer, just thinking, okay, well, this is my instrument. Like a lot of people do is this is my instrument. I'm just going to get really good at this. And that's kind of your focus, but obviously you were interested in more things than just drumming. So how did that transition take place?
Since I started writing songs young, in high school.
Wow.
Writing
down lyrics or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I mean, I started writing lyrics and paying attention to lyrics and things like that. And I had a really hot English teacher. So that helped too, to pay attention in English class. So, and she actually had read some of my lyrics and she liked them. So that was always an inspiration for me,
Sure.
And with drumming and stuff. And I had a little Casio and I had a 5-string acoustic guitar. And that's what I used to write songs at that time.
Right.
So from the beginning, when I started joining original bands as a drummer, I started writing my own songs.
Right. And what did you write them on? Was it guitar or?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really matter. It just, however the mood came, it was and even
so
to this
you
day,
had a guitar at this point.
I had a guitar. I had like a five string. I don't know why I never put a six string on it, but I always had a five string guitar. It was just easier to play. I was like, eh, who needs that?
It's less complicated.
Exactly. I was a drummer, right?
String schming, who needs it?
Exactly. I could have gone on three strings.
As a drummer, did you find yourself, as you're learning other instruments, like approaching those kind of like a drummer? I've seen like Dave Grohl interviews, for example, where he'll talk about the guitar, where he views like the bass strings as a kick and the higher strings as like a hi-hat or snare. Do you find yourself like approaching other instruments with a drummer's rhythmic kind of mindset, or?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, not into that detail, you know, but it's, yeah, I mean, the right hand is very important as far as, you know, your rhythmic, you know, the way you play, you know. So if you're very rhythmic, which, you know, as a drummer you are, so that will incorporate to every other instrument, whether it's guitar, bass, keyboards, you know, you've always got that motion and that rhythm driving you forward. So yeah, that was a definitely integral part of the way I play, for sure. And I'm glad I started as a drummer and not anything else, because that really laid the foundation rhythmically for me to be able to move on to being a multi-instrumentalist, you know?
Right.
And when you're in bands, you know, you see, you know, guitar players and bass players, and you watch them and you see how they perform and the things that they do. So naturally you pick it up, you know, you pick up, how's he doing that? And you kind of see that, and you see how the bass player. So, and you get, you know, for me, it was, I got kind of, I don't want to say bored with playing drums, but I knew I had more potential than just playing drums. Right. So I wanted to explore that. And there was a producer too who actually kind of put me to the question of, you know, you need to decide whether you want to stay behind the drums and do that, or you want to come out front. And
let's talk about that a little bit, because you did actually go from being behind the drums and just playing drums in a band context to actually putting together your own band and fronting that band. So how did that come about? And why did you feel the need to, I guess, to front a band? A couple of bands.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was like, there's nothing more satisfying than being able to write your own songs, play your own songs, sing your own songs. To me, that was the most gratifying thing, you know, is to be able to, and to start from nothing. So you have nothing, and then all of a sudden you have this big creation, and now you're on stage in front of hundreds of people, you know, playing your own stuff and singing your own stuff, and then you have all your bandmates behind you. So that was incredibly satisfying to be able to do that. And then you have an audience, and then you build that audience, and they actually like your songs, and then they start to come to all your shows, and they start buying your singles or records. And so, yeah, I mean, it just was a huge step, that just evolved.
Yeah.
But
was it intimidating at first?
Of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, but you have to remember too, as a drummer, you're the heartbeat of the band.
Yeah.
Without a good drummer, the band's going to suck. I don't care how good the guitar player is or the singer is. If the drummer isn't solid, isn't really dead on. So, because you start the song and you got to hold the song all the way through. So for that reason, I had that in me, you know, and I was trained by being in all those bands. So stepping out front, yeah, it was scary, because now you're out front. You know, it felt like, you know, you're being completely naked and then singing in front of things. So that took a little getting used to, you know. But I had a lot of confidence, you know, because I had a good band and I had good musicians. And when you rehearse, you know, you kind of get it into, it's almost like a muscle memory, you know, you get that kind of routine. So, you know, and just the passion of doing it, you know, kind of leads you onto your own, you know, evolution. Sure. You know?
Tell us, so within, like, so for example, when you are, you're a songwriter, obviously, you're a singer, multi-instrumentalist and so forth. How did you get involved with home studio recording? How did that start? And how did you get your studio set up? What's your studio like today? How did that kind of evolve?
So I started with, I think I started with a boom box that could record. So as soon as I found like the boom box, I could record and I could kind of,
This is
I
going
had,
back to tape, ladies and gentlemen.
it was way back. So yeah, I mean, you could, you hold the two buttons down, you push record, and your microphone on the boom box would record.
Right.
So that was amazing. So, and that was a good way for me to like hear what I sounded like. I mean, you got to kind of hear what you sound like
Sure.
and record your ideas and your songs.
It's like
So
the
that,
equivalent of, voice memos, on your phone
What
today.
around what period is this with the
This was
boombox?
where we had basically no technology. So that was like in probably 79 or 80
Yeah.
started.
Yeah.
It was like there was no technology at all. And then starting in the 80s, they came out with four track cassette players. And that was, so I bought one, I saved like all my money. And then once I got that, I was like, wow, you got four tracks to play with and you can really, so that was a blast. And once that started, that was it for me. I was like,
Yeah, you were hooked.
I was hooked.
Yeah.
Especially, when you're in band, you could actually record the whole band live. And I was like, oh my God, listen to this, because otherwise you would really not know how you sound or
Right.
if you're jamming. Like, say we would jam and you wouldn't even know like certain ideas if you didn't do it, it would just be like gone like with the wind. So that was really great for me. I really
So
enjoyed.
would you suggest for some musicians who are working in their home studios, would you suggest that somebody who's aspiring to be a singer, for example, that they record themselves or even guitar players or and listen back to that to kind of track their progress?
Record everything.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. Record everything.
Yeah.
Because especially if you want to be a songwriter, you never know where there's an idea, and try to record it like the best you can, because you never know, you might use that sometime. And I'll
Right.
give you an example
Yep.
on the song I wrote, Innocence in Blue.
Yep.
One of the parts and one of the main parts on that song was done on a four track,
Right.
and different people tried to imitate that and they couldn't do it. So I ended up having to go back to, and this is in the 90s, so I had to go back to a 1985 cassette tape to pull the original part off of that tape,
Right.
put it
Interesting.
on the new record. Yeah, because
Right.
it was the feel was like, nobody could get that feel, and that's the thing. That's why I say record everything, because
Right.
initially too, from what I have read, that a lot of producers say sometimes it's the demo takes of the singers
Yeah.
that end up using that because it has the most feel
Yeah.
in it. So
Yep.
that's why I say record everything. I mean, as much as you can.
I totally agree. Like, for myself, just recently wrote a song, and the scratch vocal track that I laid down on that ended up, with the exception of maybe a couple of phrases, being the main vocal track. Because every other track that I recorded after it did not have the same energy, just did not sound as good. Now, I don't know if that's because, I listened to it so many times, that's what I was used to, but I just, trying to be as unbiased as possible, it just sounded, better to me.
Yeah,
So, yeah.
it's true, and I think too that when you first write something or it's your first idea, I think the passion, that's when the magic is really
You're
happening.
excited.
Yeah, if
Yeah.
you're gonna wait like and you start tracking it and start a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, trying to put all that down and trying to recapture that feeling again, I think it's more difficult to do that.
Sure,
And
sure.
I've read recently too about Prince, and how quickly he was like the fastest person to record anything.
Right.
Was his He had this girl engineer, and when he was recording Doves Cry, he did that in 2 days, fully
Yeah.
done.
Yeah.
He wrote it one night, they recorded everything the next day and mixed it.
And he played everything too, right?
He played everything
Yeah.
in 2 days, and that
Yeah.
was like a huge hit
Yeah,
song. It was
he
like
was incredible.
I love all
incredible.
those old. They have that YouTube channel from the recording studio Prince and Van Halen used. There's that lady Peggy that worked with him. I think Susan is the other one, but yeah, those interviews you're talking about are amazing.
Yeah, was she the engineer?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think Peggy, I get the names mixed up, but I think Peggy was his like engineer, right, or one of his.
Yeah, I think
ones.
That was her. Yeah, yeah. Right. It's incredible, you know, because the technology that we have today, and with YouTube, and you can actually see things for younger musicians to be able to see that and hear, you know, how things were done. You know, it sets up such a great.
Sure.
For them,
sure,
to get started at a young age, you know.
So one thing I wanted to ask you is, when you're writing a song, how do you determine, number one, what the tempo is or what the tempo should be, and number two, how do you decide on the groove, like the beat for the song? I think those would be really helpful for our listeners to hear.
That is a really great question, and that's a really hard question to answer, because creating a song, for me, it comes in different ways. It really does. It could be on guitar, it could be keyboard,
sure.
It could be just in my head, and then you got to flesh it out.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, I'll record it. A lot of times I record it on my phone, so I'll just grab my guitar, and I have this idea, and I'll just play
sure.
it on the phone, and I'll record it. And I'll listen to it back like immediately. And if I think it's like, oh, this is worth pursuing, then I'll come into the studio and I'll start it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like, how do you decide on the tempo? Is that just like an innate thing that you feel and then you try to figure it out what it is on your DAW? How do you approach that?
Do you try different
tempos with a song?
I don't. I usually do it by how it feels singing. You know, how
right.
comfortable it is to sing.
Gotcha.
That's how I determine what the tempo is. You know, if I do it live and it feels good singing it live that way.
Not too rushed, not too slow.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Goldilocks approach, right?
Yeah, just exactly. Right. It's like it's a comfortable level, you know, that you have to get with your singing and phrasing.
Yeah.
And how the melody is put together. And,
yeah.
And sometimes I run into trouble with that too, because your own meter and your own time mm-hmm. is different. So once the click track goes on and you get some kind of groove going or something, sometimes I find it, I'll be like, oh, the verse works fine, but then the chorus sounds either too fast.
Right.
You know, with the verses and the choruses or the bridge, I'm like, it doesn't all line up sometimes because I wrote it without a click track, you know, or I wrote it initially.
Right.
So that can be a challenge sometimes because I'm like, oh, the verse is perfect, but the chorus.
Right.
You know, because of the click track, you know.
So when you've got to that point where you've decided what the tempo is, it feels right in the verses, it feels right in the chorus, in the bridge and so forth. How do you decide, like, you know, like kick and snare pattern, like how is that just something because of your drumming background that it just comes to you, or is it more of a deliberate process? Talk a little bit about that.
So as a drummer, I've always been a melodic drummer.
Right.
So I always follow the vocal melody.
Right.
Always. You know, I never really followed the bass player as in the sense that if it was just a groove and then the singer would just sing something on top of it. It was always, for me, follow the melody. Whatever
right.
the melody is doing, you know, that's where the kicks are going. That's where this is going. That's where, you know, so I always end up following the melody with my drum beats.
Like to accentuate like certain parts of the melody or just to kind of work and flow with it or
exactly.
actually both.
Whatever the rhythm for the melody is usually what I follow.
Gotcha.
Now, it doesn't have to be a straight, you know, 4-4 pattern, you know, it could be, you can mix that up,
right.
you know, but, you know, one of my favorite drummers is Stuart Copeland. So he was a really melodic drummer too. And his beats were very, based around what I guess Sting would do.
Sure.
In the sense,
yeah.
You know what I mean? But he just did it in a much more laid back way.
Right.
You know, you listen to his hi-hat work, it follows the melody a lot, you
right,
know?
Right.
You know, or sometimes he'll do it in between the melody, you know what I mean? To bring stuff out in and out. So there's an ebb and flow. And Keith Moon was a melodic drummer. You ever
listen to
the maniac Keith Moon? If you listen to some of that Who stuff,
yeah,
he's doing these incredible fills right on top of the vocal.
I know.
I checked out sometime, really listen to like.
Yeah, he was manic. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just
nobody else
to,
was like him.
Nobody else could really do that. Yeah. I was like, that's incredible, you know. Yeah. It's like, and it works so well, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just funny because it's like, oh my God, it would be things that I would never like. Traditionally, you would never do, you know, you don't want to chop off the vocal, but he was just like,
yeah, he was a madman.
Yeah,
he was great. I mean, that's what gave the Who its sound, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, it's hard to really say, you know, it's really depends on the type of music you do,
yeah,
you know, kind of music you write. I mean, obviously, R&B is going to be different than, you know, rock and things like that, you know, or reggae or anything like that. So, it all just depends on the kind of genre of music you're writing, you know.
And when you're writing, do you usually start out by recording a beat first, or do you start out by like recording a guitar part, or is it always different? Keyboards?
I would say generally it's always different, but I start usually with the chords and melody. I mean, that's normally how I start.
Right. Sometimes what's the thing that you lay down for? So do you play like your guitar and sing over top of it and record that, or do you have the melody already, but do you just lay down like the guitar track first or the keyboard track first, and then go back in and overdub the melody? How do you approach that?
I mean, that's usually what I do. I'll take a click track and then I'll start however I wrote it, whether it's on a keyboard, a MIDI keyboard, and just put, you know, a MIDI track down, and just a sketch, you know, it's just a sketch of it, or a guitar track. I don't worry about the sound initially. I just kind of get it on there,
right,
so I can get the feel of the melody, and then with the click track, and then I'll go searching for rhythmic ideas.
Gotcha.
So against it,
right?
Usually the bass is like the last thing I put in, because
like,
once I get
like Paul McCartney.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. You know. The bass is usually the last thing I'll put in.
Mm-hmm.
Because once I get the melody and the chords together, then the rhythm together underneath the song,
then you'll layer that in.
Yeah, then that's, I layer everything on top of that. And then you have your different sections. So, you know, whether you're dropping beats or whether you're pulling stuff in and out or however that.
Right.
Yeah. So it kind of takes on its life of its own, and you just kind of follow that.
Yeah,
path.
I know. It kind of leads you along. Yeah.
Leads you to kind of where it wants to go, you know?
Yeah.
And I always think there's always some kind of divine intervention going on too, because
feels like that sometimes.
It really does, because I'm not a trained, you know, musician. I didn't go to school. I didn't go to college for music. Mm-hmm. I learned everything on my own. I learned it from, you know, listening to other people play and just, you know, mimicking what they do. Sure. You know, and so that's how I learned.
Right.
You know, so sometimes I come up with things and then once you put everything together, and that's why. Recording things are so important, and home recording is so important, because you can layer stuff, so you don't have to be the best player, but once you start layering things on top of each other, you can get a huge sound.
Yeah,
you know, if that's what you're going after, you know. But there's just magic that can happen with all of that.
Yeah.
And
I think, do we lose you? I think we lost him. All right. Well, we have an electrical storm going on down here. We are in South Florida, after all. And unfortunately, we lost our guest, Alan. So we want to thank him for being on the pod today. And you can find his music on all the streaming platforms under the name Najarian. And that's Najarian. And you can also find his website at najariansongs.com. That's Najarian songs.com. Thank you so much. Tippins was awesome as usual, bro. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I loved it. Thank you, Alan, again. All good.
We'll catch you on the next podcast. Thanks.
Peace.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.